This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Good evening and welcome to Campus Voices on WRFL Lexington, a program where we take a look at what's going on in the Lexington and UK communities. As always, I'm your host, Maggie Davis, and today we are discussing the hunger and homelessness issues that have been developing on college campuses, including in our own community and around the nation. First, we'll hear from WRFL reporter Chadwick George, who reports on the status of homelessness and hunger here at the University of Kentucky.
Some University of Kentucky students know there is a struggle for money, food, housing, and ultimately providing for themselves. In a survey done by University of Kentucky's Department of Dietetics and Human Nutrition and Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and Digital Studies, they found that 43% of the students surveyed were experiencing some level of food insecurity. 24% of the students suffer from food insecurity, 19% qualified as hungry and experiencing very low food security, and 8% of the students were suffering from housing security. 56% of the first-generation students and low-income students suffer from food insecurity. 30% of the students said that food insecurity affected their educational performance. This is according to the 2016 Hunger on Campus report. For WRFL Radio, I'm Chadwick George.
Some numbers there that we're going to be discussing in just a moment, but first, as always, I want to take a moment to introduce the experts we have in studio with us today. First, we have Ms. Jenny Ramsey. She's the director and founder of the Catholic Action Center for nearly 20 years. And that center is all volunteers coming together to serve the Lexington community, so we're really excited to have her here with us. We're also joined by Mr. Nicholas Kerwald, who's the Dean of Students here at UK for just over 4 years now. And he's in charge of the residential life, student life, and community of concern, as well as some other aspects of student life here on campus. Thank you both so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Great. Like we just heard from Chadwick George, the reporter, there has been that survey recently that shows that 43% of students at UK are considered food insecure. But Mr. Kerwald, I do know that there is some controversy regarding that number and that statistic and sort of how those numbers were found. From an administrator's point of view, what's your opinion on that survey?
Well, just to start with, I mean, from my position, I think the institution recognizes that we have, money is really, really important to our students. I mean, just period. I mean, I think the institution recognizes that. Obviously, the institution has engaged in a multi-year study, which is really the backdrop for why the institution was looking to change our entire financial aid model here at the institution, right? And really trying to direct a lot more need-based aid in terms of how important money is to student success, their persistence here, and ultimately to graduation. I mean, I think in terms of the specific numbers themselves, I do think in some ways there's some skepticism, not because that this isn't an issue, but the question is to what extent, right? I mean, I think, and there was in a recent op-ed, actually, I think in the Herald Leader, right, where there was reference to, I think right. We recognize, right, in terms of Kentucky, you know, Kentucky's level of food insecurity on a state, on the Commonwealth level, sits somewhere, I've heard, you know, 17% or 20%. And so, I mean, it's sort of, like I said, a question mark as to how does the institution's food insecurity, right, more than double the states in terms of the students that are attending. But that's still to say, it's an issue, and obviously the university recognizes that it's an issue because we wouldn't be going through these other things. And so I think for us it's really trying to dig a little bit deeper, look at how we design the questions, look at what resources students are using, and ultimately trying to design a tool a survey and collection that we can then actually turn into action, right? So that that could potentially address that issue.
So you brought up a little bit about like the multi-year comprehensive survey on UK's end. Is that still in the process of happening or has that already been completed?
So after getting the initial survey results, what we wanted to do is just go back and look at some of our national sort of benchmarks. There are other institutions who have done this. Going back and looking at the original 2017 survey that was done by Dietetics and Nutrition and tried to basically pull a lot of different questions. And like I said, part of it too is to ask specific questions to the institution. So we know what resources that we currently provide. How aware are students of those?
When you say resources, do you mean in terms of housing or financial aid?
It's a little bit of both, right? I mean, the real primary look is at our food and housing issues, right? And so what resources are out there that we can actually direct students to? So in the example of food, obviously we know we have a pantry and we have some meal programs when you think of farm to fork. And we have some of those things. And so one, how aware are students of those? I mean, part of this too is to linking this to bigger issues, right? Because part of this is linking it to what do we know about students filling out their federal financial aid and their FAFSA, and have they done that? You know, from some other benefits outside of the university, right? Some of students filling out their FAFSA and actually agreeing to do work study has back end implications to their capacity to get SNAP benefits if they are food insecure. And so, how do they then have access to these other programs?
Right, just completing all the little steps along the way.
And again, from a university perspective, how well have we or haven't we, right, in terms of communicating that to students on the front end? And how do you navigate some of these processes? And so, again, a lot of this is looking at that student awareness. And then for us as an institution, it's how do we better coordinate all of these things? Because there's a lot of to navigate. This is not a one size fits all solution. I think there are a lot of different programs that people could potentially use or would use. And so you have to sort of have a menu of options, if you will.
Right. Ms. Ramsey, we'll send it back over to you now. I know obviously the Catholic Action Center is more of a Lexington community base, but from a student's perspective, do you tend to see any University of Kentucky students using your services?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and
on a regular basis?
Oh, yeah. We have some who are we are a overnight shelter also. And we have those, you know, people want this education. They want to be part of the University of Kentucky. And they may be coming from places that they can't get those resources. No matter what a great job the university does, they may not be eligible. Their families can't come up with the match or whatever percent they need. And then there are those, and we have seen this, I've been dealing with those who are insecure on their basic needs for 25 years. And there is a sense of indignity for some to admit what they need. Mm-hmm. When they have to ask, it can be too much. Same way with students. You know, the student doesn't want people to know that, yeah, my family can't be giving me that extra 25 a week. You know, yes, I have this, but I don't have that. You know, it's the basic human dignity that is the thing we have to protect and offer. And see, that's the Catholic Action Center is based on the idea that we're all in this together. And how can we uphold each other's dignity as we give the needed basic needs? Basic needs being food and shelter and community.
Right.
So, you know, this model is not that unusual. Ours was started in the early 30s in the middle of the Great Depression in New York by Dorothy Day, the Catholic worker movement. And it is community coming together to share resources. I've often wondered, in fact, I've worked with the university for years, and we helped with the beginning of many of these efforts they have now, saying, let's be sure everyone is fed. Let's be sure everyone is, you know, whether we call it food secure or not, if I don't have a meal today and maybe my check is going to be in 2 days or my money from home will be there or my paycheck.
Right.
Whatever.
How do you fill those 2 days?
It's filling in the gap so no one's left out. And the thought of having, you know, community dinners, places right. people do go eat. And I know a lot of students go up here to Maxwell Street Presbyterian on Thursday nights. Right. Everybody knows they've got great spaghetti. Nobody pays right. for it. 200 right. people go eat. Having those kind of community dinners that those who have share and those who don't get to share the next time.
Right.
So the thought of no questions asked, and that's what we're based on. And it's the University of Kentucky cannot do it that way. But I'm going to tell you, there's so many students and so many families that want their children, their family, as part of UK, that they will go to lengths above and beyond what they expect to have to pay.
Yeah, and there's, for me, there's two really good points in there, which is, you know, again, this notion of the indignity or maintaining a person's dignity and going through this process. And again, to that point, how does the university, it's one thing to have a resource, but it's another to design a process mm-hmm. that people will utilize and feel comfortable utilizing. And there's always this balance in terms of how arduous, right? Or what is that initial process? And how do you, again, you want to target your resources in a real strategic way.
Right. And she brought up an interesting point there in terms of that no questions asked. Obviously, UK cannot follow that same process.
Can't.
And obviously.
Like the government can't.
Right.
That's why we are not government funded. We are all a response from community.
Right.
It is a grassroots. And there could be grassroots at the University of Kentucky that addresses some of these issues that the administration can't.
Right. But from that administrative perspective, then, how do you sort of follow that? Well, you can't, you know, infringe on someone's own. I don't want to talk about it. But also, UK is liable for that. And sort of how do you keep up with those students? If they're spending the night somewhere like the Catholic Action Center, how does UK become aware of those situations?
And like I said, that's where I think you really do evaluate and you really strike the balance where you try to basically ask the bare minimum, mm-hmm. right? There are some bare minimum things we really want to know and try to design a process where, like I said, it doesn't become a barrier to access.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because ultimately, again, if you have all these great resources, but there's a barrier to access, they'll never get utilized. So no matter how much you provide. And like I said, that there is no magic answer to that. There
no.
is no, it can be difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think ultimately, we talked about earlier about the survey design. Part of it too is you just have to ask the students, the ones who feel comfortable, who are potentially need to say, how can we design this so that you would still access this resource and it wouldn't get to a place where, you know,
right.
students feel like it's too much or they feel like it's, you know, where they've lost that sense of self or dignity.
Right. And you both brought up this phrase here, the basic needs of students. So obviously there are students on campus trying to fill those basic needs. We're going to hear from some of them. We sent out reporter Chadwick George for WRFL. Here's what they had to say.
University of Kentucky Stop Hunger chapter was chartered on December 9th, 2014. Since then, they have provided resources to students who might be suffering from food insecurity and housing insecurity. Bill Revelt, president of the organization, says there are two ways they are providing students with housing and food insecurity.
Hunger is a student organization that works to make sure all students can pay for food and housing at UK. And we do this in two main ways. One is that we directly provide food to students. So we have a program called Swipe Ahead that's in partnership with Student Government Association, where every semester students can apply and take a little survey explaining whether they're struggling to pay for food. And then they, in response, they get granted some meal swipes that they can use at either of the dining halls at UK. And so we give out 2,000 meal swipes every semester with that, and we're hoping to expand that further in the future. And then the second way that we work to make sure everyone can pay for food and housing is we do advocacy. So right now we're doing the basic needs campaign, where we're trying to get UK to open a basic needs center because right now there's no single place for students to go when they can't pay for food and housing.
Stop Hunger is one of the organizations on campus that is trying to make a difference. And like we heard Bo say, they are trying to establish a, quote, basic needs center here at UK. Are they working with the university on that in terms of that connection, or is it more of an outside student-led organization?
Well, there's two ways to answer that. I know Bo and actually, some of the faculty and staff within dietetics and nutrition have been a part of a larger university work group. Within student and academic life, we established a work group in 2017. And so they've been pulled into that. So the answer to that is yes. The other part of it is, but Stop Hunger or S Stop Hunger is also a student organization. And again, I think like we recognize student organizations and the student voice is powerful. And so they simultaneously have the ability to advocate on their own. And so the answer is probably a little bit of both.
Right. And going off that, when they say a basic needs center, what would that look like on such a big campus like the University of Kentucky? So many students go here. Everyone's, quote, basic needs may be a little bit different. What do you think? I mean, is there a plan in terms of what the students really need? What is that basic need?
Yeah, so you've really touched on a really great point, which is you have to start with this notion of how do you want to define a basic need? So at the University of Kentucky, how do we want to define that? There are some other national models out there, and I think right now where we are institutionally, it's really thinking about food, housing, and then how that folds into this broader notion of financial wellness. I mean, one of the comments that was made earlier, right, is on this notion of how do you fill the gap?
Right.
And so you do have food and housing, but to me, I also sort of disaggregate that or separate that into you have short-term needs, mm-hmm. And you also have long-term needs, and that's where you look at this greater issue of financial wellness or financial well-being. And to me, you kind of have to address those things differently.
Right.
Here's a great example where, again, we have, I think, some good short-term resources. We can look at improving them, but also recognizing, are they being used for short-term needs? Or do we have students who actually have longer-term mm-hmm. needs? How are we better? How are we addressing those? Because I guess if you were to ask my professional opinion, a Big Blue Pantry really should be a short-term gap measure, mm-hmm. and some of these mm-hmm. meal programs should be. It's not something that we want students to be utilizing, right, for an entire semester or academic
right.
year. And so part of this is looking at not just what are your short-term resources that you can provide, but how do we address this more sort of larger systemic issue? And what does that look at an institutional level for more of that long term? And so great question, because one, I think for us, I think it means really sitting down and seeing how do we want to define it?
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I think really separating both the short term and long term.
Right. And of course, that's very campus oriented from a community perspective, sort of where
it's
is there
the
a
same
difference
thing.
There?
If you look at this as a difficulty, it's all the same. The university is its own community within our community, but they're same needs, human needs. So when we look at one thing about university students who fall between the cracks, it's those folks who are living on campus is the number one. They all are living in apartments. They can't pay their rent. Mm-hmm. They get kicked out by their roommates, whatever. So they can become, in essence, without a home, yet they're students going to school every day. So that's, that's one issue, which the university can't solve those. As a community, we all can address these issues. And that's why the Catholic Action Center, which is a house of hospitality, it was began in the 1930s, like I said, after the Great Depression, to give people a place to be. And that is needed whether it's at the University of Kentucky or whether it's in the greater community of Lexington. But I'm going to give you one statistic that many students don't know, and I always like to share it with them. There are over 60,000 in human beings in Lexington, Kentucky, that live at or below the poverty level.
Right.
Now, when you're talking about 22% in our affluent Lexington, we're not talking about mm-hmm. the rest of the state, but we're talking about just
very
here.
Very urban area.
Very right. urban. And that many who are on the brink. So sometimes people fall off that brink. Just as they have the great plans coming to the university and they end up having something go wrong. A car breaks down. The same things that happen in the real world.
Right.
And not that this isn't the real
everyone.
World.
It right.
affects everyone. And it can crash their plan. And we, as community, and I think all of us as the institution I know, does not want it to affect their education.
Right. And you lead in perfectly there. Like you said, it does affect the greater Lexington area, not just these students here at UK. And that is a huge problem, obviously, in Fayette County and on campus, but across a more regional scale. So we'll send it over now to WRFL reporter Tyler Parker with more information and statistics about Lexington's struggles.
Two issues that are affecting students on campus are also affecting those in the Lexington community and the state of Kentucky. Homelessness and hunger issues in Kentucky have not subsided. In 2018, the Food Research and Action Center ranked Kentucky the 12th worst for hunger. As of 2017, the Kentucky Housing Corporation identified 4,025 people experiencing homelessness across the state of Kentucky, while the Lexington-Fayette County identified 1,051 people. Among youth aged 24 or younger, 135 identified as unaccompanied, which means they were living without an adult member of the household aged 25 or older and without a child in their care. The housing director of the Community Action Council in Lexington, Kentucky, Lindsay Anderson, gives her perspective on the state of homelessness in the community.
Homelessness prevention and intervention was created with the city. We've been able to reduce chronic homelessness by about 50%. And in order to help further that and to help end homelessness in Lexington, it's always helpful if we have more funding available. That way we can help financially assist more homeless folks get into housing. And then also creating more affordable housing in Lexington. So not just resources to help house them, but also affordable housing that, where they can live on their own and afford it by themselves.
For WRFL Radio, I'm Tyler Parker.
Ms. Ramsey, we mentioned earlier that you've been with the Catholic Action Center now for nearly 20 years. In that time, obviously, we heard a little bit about sort of the homelessness trends in Lexington, but what trends have you noticed personally?
Major trends. And actually, I've been doing it since 1995. As an aside, I was a tax accountant and was drawn into this by meeting the people.
Wow.
Which has been an amazing journey. But the biggest trend, I mean, number one was when 9/11 occurred. It changed the lifestyle of those who are experiencing homelessness because there were so many more regulations as far as everything, from getting jobs to having IDs, et cetera. That is a huge change. But the saddest in the 2000s, from 2000 to 2010, was watching the disintegration of family from Eastern Kentucky. And until about 2005, we did not have people, well, we would have folks that would appear at the center from Bell County or from Clay County. It would be a, you know, 22-year-old or a 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. And we would say, well, where's your family? And they would say, well, I don't want to talk to any of them but Grandma. So we'd call Grandma, and Grandma would come get them.
Yeah.
I hate to say it this way, but it's true. Starting in about 2012, we'd call Grandma, and she was on crack. Mm-hmm. The disintegration of the fabric of family is what creates disconnection and homelessness.
So from maybe an age perspective, do you see any trends in terms of, do you see more college students coming, more older people coming? Obviously, the opioid epidemic is huge in that regard.
The OxyContin in Eastern Kentucky created a lot of the issues in Kentucky because we're the highest in childhood homelessness, by the way, mm-hmm. in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't just that. Now it's a lack of affordable housing. The saddest trend that we're seeing now, and I would say for the past 3 to 4 years, are my age group, the baby boomers, who are aging out mm-hmm. and who aren't in good health. They have been marginalized all their life, living on the edges. But now those who are physically handicapped, mentally ill, and the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
I welcomed a 78-year-old man into the center last night whose family had dropped him off because they don't want to fool with him anymore. That's the disconnection of family that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it used to be that we took care of each other, and now people think that the government or the university, even in this case, are there to take care of them. And that's not true. It's all of our responsibility.
Right. And you mentioned earlier, sort of on that point, that you don't receive any federal funding. Where does all, in terms of just meeting these basic needs, one, how many people do you see on maybe a weekly, monthly basis? And two, how do you afford that without that federal funding? Where is the money for the Catholic Action Center
coming from? We don't use money. We use people and their hearts and their. We have served 5.9 million meals since we opened our doors. We have housed, we have had 1.8 million nights of shelter with the goodness of the community. You know, people want to help. We are an opportunity for people to reach out. And that compassion is what we have to integrate into our lives. And so many UK students come and help us all the time. And we're always, we've been part of a lot of the work that UK has done on developing compassion and service for students, because that is our, the bottom line of why we exist, mm-hmm. is to give people an opportunity to help those in need, and those in need to give back to the community.
Right, Mr. Kerold, we'll send it over to you. Mm-hmm. She brought up the fact of increasing housing costs. Obviously, college has gotten more expensive in the last decade, even the last 4 or 5 years. Do you see there's any sort of correlation maybe between these increasing dorm prices? Obviously, the dorms here are beautiful and renovated and nice, but they're also more expensive than they've ever been. Do you see that sort of feeding into this higher number of food insecure or housing insecure students on campus?
That's a good question. I think the reality is, my answer to that is I don't know. Like I said, to me, it's not about our residence halls and solely our residence halls. Like I said, it's a lot bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think for us, we're trying to look at everything collectively. Obviously, on a national level, to your earlier point, there's a lot of conversation just about the cost of education and right. higher education in general. And so the implications for what that is, and the implications for, having a part-time job, and to the extent of what percentage that can help cover or fund, going to college and going through higher education, and how that gets smaller and smaller. I think in general, there's always a concern about the costs mm-hmm. Of education, whether it's for things you might consider non-instructional costs, or those things that are instructional costs, right? Tuition, books.
Life is just more expensive.
Yeah, both of those things. Mm-hmm. And like you said, in addition to, again, it's what are all the resources. When you look at federal financial aid, when you look at, what Pell has done and how much it's increased versus the cost of higher education. And again, for our institution, as we look at our financial aid practices and say, hey, we have a need out here. And so how do we set students up to be successful in the long term? For me, and this is where, I'll sort of circle back to the beginning of this program, which is to say there is no one single thing right. that I think drives it. And I don't think there's one single solution or answer right. To solve this. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot. Mm-hmm. It takes everyone involved to do it. And I think it takes a lot of lifting in a lot of different ways.
Right. Obviously, there is no one single solution. It's such a broad and wide-reaching issue. Unfortunately, if I do have to ask the question, I'm going to start with you, Ms. Ramsey. If there would be one extra thing you'd like to see maybe Lexington do or the community do to sort of battle these huge issues, what do you think that next step has to be?
Well, it has to be, and it is in some ways, addressing affordable housing. But we have to do cooperative housing. It can't be the traditional affordable housing, because there's always someone making money on the end. So how can we do this as community? Cooperative, of course, you're going to say these are pie in the sky, but we're really not. We've got to get back to the place that community takes care of community. And there are lots of models that have lived through the world over the years of how cooperative housing, for one thing, can work. But is there a solution? Of course not. It's each of us caring about each other mm-hmm. and addressing them. And it's not about statistics, and it's not about looking to the university to solve it.
Right.
I really think that that's a mistake some people make. They'd come in and think, well, the University of Kentucky, if I'm going to go there, they should be able to give me this, this, and this. Well, these are the barriers. These are the places you have to reach. But how can we as community help lift people up to that level?
Right. And Mr. Kerold, we'll send it to you now. Obviously, that's more of a community perspective. But how do you sort of foster that on a campus scale?
Yeah. My answer, right, if you were to ask me one simple thing, and maybe in some ways it's the sibling or cousin of community, which is just coordination, mm-hmm. right? So how does the university have this relationship with Lexington and the resources that Lexington has? how do we work together on this, right, in terms of, you know, between the city and the university? The other part of it is just internally. How do we as an institution, right, better coordinate and work together to do this? So again, Lexington's a big place. The university in and of itself is a, right, is a,
it's massive.
Is a mini city.
Yeah.
Right. And so we also need to coordinate it. And part of this is, you know, both of these, this sense of community and this coordination. I think both of those things come from a place of, like all good things, you just have to say this is real and that this is an issue, because you aren't going to activate people if no one's willing to say that this is a current problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent, so true. Point. You know, I want to say one thing, though, about the university. I've watched it over the years. It's made, as an institution, worked hard. Mm-hmm. To address issues. But we have had activists, the student activists, I cannot give enough credit to. You go back when Fusion was started and the different ways right. of activating the student body, because to me, you all are the gift to our city. You know, we have however many 30,000 young activists coming, and how can we be connected so that it can be a better life and a better world for all of us here in Fayette County and the whole state of Kentucky.
Right. Totally agree. Thank you all both so much. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but I want to thank our guests one more time, Ms. Jenny Ramsey and Mr. Nicholas Kerwald, for coming to speak with us this week about food insecurity and the housing insecurities on campus and in Lexington. As always, we'll be back next week to discuss a new topic. This one will be artificial intelligence and how it is affecting business. For WRFL Lexington, I'm Maggie Davis. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.